Welcome to The Cat Lady, the show where people opine about felines. I'm Lana, the Cat Lady, and each episode I invite a person I think is awesome to react about cats. Cat lover, cat hater, or cat agnostic. I'm curious what makes them tick.
Elizabeth comes from a proud family of cat owners. She's able to debunk myths about cats in rapid succession and shares her number one tip to cat ownership. The show takes a turn when she reveals her hidden talent.
Welcome to the show, Elizabeth. It is great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I don't know if there is a person better positioned to talk about cats than you.
Yes, I feel like I have been training for this my entire life.
So what is your first memory of a cat?
Tricky question, because we have always had cats. I was born into a family that already owned cats, and they have always been a part of my life. And so it's a little difficult for me to sort of sift through what are the things that I actually like are actual tangible memories that I have, and what are just sort of the stories that get told over and over again that I, you know, that then sort of become memory in their own way. Probably my grandfather's cats. My grandfather was widowed fairly young. My grandmother passed away. I think she was only about 50 when she died, and so he would have been in his 50s as well. And so he then lived as a single man for about 30 years before remarrying, and in that span became something of a cat lady in his own right. And so there were just, you know, I think at one time he had as many as 6 cats, and sort of, you know, that number was always fluctuating, and it was either cats that he himself had acquired at some point, or that when friends of his had needed to give up their cats or rehome them, he was just always the person that they went to.
So did you have other pets that you were relating to, or?
Yeah, well, so we only ever had cats. We never owned other types of animals. And so when I was born, I think at that time my family had 2 cats, and then one of them died. And then my dad brought home this tiny little white kitten. I think I must have been about 2 years old when he brought that cat home. And so I don't remember that cat coming into our lives. But then when I was, I think, 5, one night at dinner, my dad, who, by the way, is allergic to cats, but was always the person bringing them home.
What? What? Hold the phone.
Yes. So to go back to one night at dinner, at that point, I was 5 years old. We already had 2 cats in the family. And that night, one night at dinner, my dad said, "What if we got another cat?" And it was completely out of the blue. And so then it was decided that this new cat could be mine, my cat. And so we, someday following, went down to the local vet, who also had like a little animal shelter at his practice. And I, you know, they showed me all of the kittens, and I was 5 years old, and how do you choose one kitten? And they brought out this tiny little gray kitten and asked me if I liked her. And I said, yes, because what else do you say when someone shows you a kitten? And so she became my cat. We brought her home, and I named her Roya, R-O-Y-A, which was actually because one of my aunts had recently gotten a gray cat, and she named the cat Roya. And so I just totally ripped it off and named my cat Roya as well. Yeah. And then Roya was my cat from the age of 5. And then she lived to be, I guess, 17, and died the summer after I had moved out of the house, and, like, you know, after finishing college and had moved away. So she had this really long, wonderful life, outlived all the other cats, and died in, I think, 2007.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was a very sweet and affectionate cat, and was my steadfast companion. And even when I had gone away to college, and so, you know, was not living at home anymore at all, on the short periods when I would come home in those years, she was always right back with me, sleeping with me through the night and, you know, on my lap when I was around the house and sort of all of that. And so, yeah, there was a very definite bond there.
Now, what about the area where you grew up? Were your neighbors or friends also this passionate about cats?
That's a good question. I grew up, I was born in Brooklyn, and we lived in Park Slope. My parents bought the house there sometime in the 70s, and we lived there until 93. So I was 9 years old when we moved out of the city. And so when we were living there, I do remember that there were always sort of other cats in the neighborhood, and we foolishly would allow our cats to go outside. We had a little backyard and would let them out. But of course, there's nothing that's, the backyard was fenced in, but that isn't going to actually keep cats in that space. Cats can climb fences. And so who knows what they were off doing and throughout the day and what other cats they came in contact with. And I think, I don't know if I have any specific memories of like young childhood friends who also had cats or who were especially taken with my cats. Certainly my mother's family, so the grandfather who I mentioned at the beginning was my mother's father. And my mother is one of four daughters. And that side of the family has always been cat people. We just, all of us have always had cats. And it's, you know, been in various quantities at different times of our lives. And I think that if we all sort of sat down and sort of charted out our history in cats, it would also tell us a lot about our mental health at certain periods. And so I think there's some interesting parallels to be drawn there. But so we were always just a very, very much a cat family. When I was 9 years old, we moved out of the city and we moved up to where my parents live now and where I happen to be visiting with them right now. We're up in the Catskill Mountains, where my parents actually live in an incredibly beautiful but incredibly remote area where they own 30 acres. And so now letting the cats out seemed like a much more natural thing to do, although probably was equally perilous because there are predators and things here. So who knows? But yeah, the cats had much more freedom once we got up here.
Now, what cats are you talking about? Do your parents have cats?
No. So my parents, after Roya died, which back in 2007, so 13 years ago, after Roya died, they decided not to get any more cats. In part because of the remoteness of where they live. And at that point, they were both still working and commuting fairly long distances and just out of the house for, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't seem responsible to leave a pet alone in the house for that long. Mm-hmm. And then they just continue now that they're both retired and home all the time, still don't have cats. And I don't exactly know why. It's something that comes up in conversation pretty regularly, that they seem to want them, but haven't done anything about it. But now that I am up here, so I've come up, as I'm sure your listeners know, we are in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. And I normally live back in New York City, and was there and working from home for the first several months of the pandemic. But with the onset of summer, decided that it was time to get a change of scenery. So I came up to my parents' house about 3 weeks ago. And I've been up here with my two cats who I now own. And, this is their first experience of being out in the country. They have had very different experiences of that.
That's culture shock and freedom for sure.
Yes. So I have two cats. I have Percy, who is a great big white and orange tabby. I think he's about 6 years old. I'm not exactly sure. he is just, he's a lover. He's just very sweet and affectionate and super friendly. And so I brought the cats up, and he was sort of immediately acclimated to the house. He's very comfortable around my parents. And I think within the first 24 hours had already started exploring outside. And we're sort of watching him every day venture out a little bit further and a little bit further and a little bit further, which is then giving me increasing anxiety in equal proportion. So I'm sort of worried that at some point he'll just disappear into the tall grass. But he is quite happy here. My other cat, her name is Brisket. And she is, goodness, I think she is 2 years old, I think, 2.5. And she's much smaller. She's a very petite, long-haired tabby. She's like the cutest thing I've ever seen. But she tends to be a little bit more timid than Percy. She has blindness in one eye. So I think that actually contributes to her, it impairs her ability to perceive the world around her. She's much more reliant on smell and sound. And so therefore the change of environment was actually quite difficult for her to adjust to. So in the 3 weeks I've been here, she spent almost all of the first week hiding under the bed. And then has slowly started venturing out a little bit further and a little bit further around the house. She's stayed all on this one floor. She hasn't gone upstairs at all. But this morning, it was as though she knew I was going to be doing this podcast today. This morning she surprised us by going outside.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so I was awoken this morning by my mother coming into the room where I'm staying, and she came in to wake me up to tell me that Brisket was outside and maybe I should like come and check on her. And so, which I did, and she had just sort of gone about halfway around the house and was just like up the hill on the other side, stayed very, very close to the building. And so I just, went up and got her and brought her back in, and it was fine, but we were all sort of a little bit surprised and perplexed by this choice that all of a sudden today was the day she felt ready to go out. She hasn't been back outside since this morning, but I hope that it's actually a sign that she has gotten more comfortable, because we're going to stay here for a few more weeks, and I would like her to just feel more relaxed. So we'll see what becomes of that, but it was very interesting timing.
Maybe she wanted her image to be represented well on air.
That could be. I hadn't considered that.
So you mentioned how there's a correlation between the number of cats in your family tree, your extended family, and mental health. And I'm interested to hear more about that and how having cats has improved your quality of life.
So I have the incredible good fortune of being able to live on my own in New York. I don't have any roommates. And I've actually been in the same apartment the entire time I've lived there, which is now over 13 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. it's a really great spot.
Yeah.
And particularly during this period, during the pandemic, when I have been home all the time, I'm hearing varieties of stories from my friends about, on the one hand, people having difficulty with roommates, and everybody being on top of each other and cooped up in small spaces, but also stories about people just being really grateful to have the company and companionship that comes with that, which I obviously don't have human companionship because I live alone, but having the cats there during this time has made a huge difference for me, especially with Percy, who is just, he's so loyal and can always be counted on for, to sit on my lap, come for a cuddle. And so I get a lot of physical affection from him, which is really, really sweet. Mm-hmm. And so just sort of having them, I mean, I don't want to say that I talk to them necessarily, or at least I don't converse with them. But
maybe this is something that will have to be edited out in post.
but certainly having them present in the apartment, has provided me with a form of companionship that I think, had I not had that during this time when I've been so isolated, has greatly contributed to me staying healthy during this experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is one of the best purchases that you've bought for the cat? Something that changed your life in their caretaking or their playtime or any of the above?
That's a good question. So I'm pretty low tech when it comes to my cat care. I don't do any of the like fancy self-cleaning litter boxes or any like of the battery powered toys or anything like that. The best ever purchase that I got to like aid in caring for a cat was a second cat. because I, prior to Percy and Brisket, I had another cat. Her name was Whimsical, and I had Whimsical from when I moved into the apartment in 2007 until 2015. And she was an only cat in that time. She was the only cat that I had, and that was right for her. She didn't get along with other cats. She sort of needed one-on-one attention. She was very, just much more independent. I got Percy a couple of months after losing Whimsical, and had just Percy, I think, for about a year or so. And he was a great cat and he was wonderful, but I could tell that he needed more attention than I had the ability to give him. I was working. I didn't really have the time to be there as much as he needed. And so, which eventually led to me getting Brisket, and I got her as a kitten. And so it was immediately, they were an immediate match. And it's been so great for, I mean, they do a really good job of keeping each other active. There's a lot of play. There's a lot of, bringing another cat into the picture just made it so much easier for me to leave, basically, to like leave them there for the long days that I was gone at work. I now have a job where in normal times I travel quite frequently. And it's just so much easier for me to be away knowing that they still have companionship. So I'm a pretty strong believer in owning pets in pairs. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing.
Over your years of owning or living with so many cats, what are some of the tips and tricks that you've picked up interacting with them or observing their behavior and figuring out what they need?
That's a good question. So I think a pretty common behavior among cats is that they all have a saturation point. And so I'm sure that many people who either do or don't like cats have had the experience where they're sweetly and gently petting the cat and the cat is really enjoying it and everything is wonderful. And then with absolutely no warning, the cat flips a switch and is now attacking you and biting you. And what was this like lovely, blissful interaction has now turned into the scariest thing that's ever happened to you. and so I don't know the science behind that. I'm not a vet, but I think that it's just that at a certain point, the cats will get overexcited. And all of those like wonderful endorphins will suddenly turn and now they've got all of this extra energy and they've got to get it out. And so it's not their intention to hurt you. This is how they respond.
That never bothered you? You never had this moment of, I'm done with cats, I need a dog?
I think it was something that happened to me a few times when I was young. And I remember my mother sort of explaining to me, oh, she just got overexcited, just leave her alone, you know, and then sort of like nursing my wounds. And I'm not that I was actually wounded, but in a more metaphorical sense, nursing my wounds. And at a certain point, you start to learn how to read the animal. And so you sort of know when it's moving towards that saturation point, and you know to sort of wind down the interaction. So yeah, I think that's something that just comes with experience. But I think for any unconverted listeners out there, I think if that happens to you, don't let that completely turn you off on cats. Like, understand that it's not anything malicious. It's not that cats are evil. It's truly just part of like you and that cat figuring out your relationship.
You're making a good case for conversion. Are there other things you would say to someone who's either strongly anti-cat, you need to debunk a myth, or if you were trying to convince someone that this is the pet you should go with, what are your talking points?
So I will say, I think one of the most widely held stereotypes of cats is that they are aloof. Mm-hmm. And though I certainly in my life have met cats that seem a little bit standoffish and like they're not interested in interacting. For me and my cats, that has never been my experience. My cats have always been very sweet and affectionate, very loyal to me. And so there is, I don't know if that's unique to me or if that is universal for cat owners, but cats do know how to bond and be loyal to humans. I think that there is also a potential perk to the aloofness in that it means that cats are also a little bit more independent. I mean, the argument is always between cats versus dogs. I don't know why we're so obsessed with that dichotomy, but there it is. It's a hallmark of our culture.
We can expand it to turtles and zebras if
sure.
you like.
And I think that sort of where the lines are drawn is that, you know, dogs are so loyal, dogs are so faithful and friendly, dogs always want to play, and cats aren't any of those things. And I would say that that's not true. So I think that it's maybe a little somewhat more nuanced, but the perk to it is that cats are far less work than dogs. For one thing, you don't have to get up 6 o'clock in the morning in February in, you know, 10 degree weather to take your cat out for a walk.
Even just hearing you say the sentence. I have to take my cat out.
Yes, I have to walk the cat. Cats, when you feel like you've had enough and you need a break from your cat, you can, like, that can be arranged. Cats don't necessarily follow you all over the house. They don't always need to be in the same room as you. Mm-hmm. So if you like a little bit of separation between yourself and your pets, you know, that can be achieved with cats, but it's not anywhere close to the kind of care and attention that dogs require. So I do think that especially for people living in urban areas, in smaller living spaces without a lot of access to open space, cats are a much more ideal pet than dogs in those situations.
And I agree. It's interesting that we are fascinated with that dichotomy between cats and dogs, as though those are the only two creatures exist. The only two personalities that exist.
Yeah, maybe. It's funny. I'm like, when I said it just moments ago, that was sort of the first time I thought about it. And I'm similarly wondering if other cultures are this obsessed with the cats versus dogs argument, right. Or if they have, you know, if somewhere in other parts of the world where different animals are more common, if they have their own version of that. I think what's funny about it is that it's sort of based on the notion that cats and dogs are two sort of like two equal but opposite ends of a spectrum or something, and I'd like, even that doesn't feel totally accurate. I don't know why we can't just love them all.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But I am noticing as you progress through the years of cat ownership, your names get more and more interesting. I feel like you moved away from just ripping off the names of other cats. What normally inspires your cat names?
So I, one thing that I do sort of weirdly pride myself on is thinking of good names for pets. I don't think that's a quantifiable talent, but apparently I think I'm good at it. But I personally think it is weird and lazy to name a pet, give a pet just like a normal person's name. I think there are some more unusual names out there that I think are actually well fitted to animals, and you know, and so there are certainly exceptions to that. But I remember growing up, I had a friend who had a dog named Bob, and that for me was like the height of laziness.
I mean, we're humans too. Let's
true.
Just call it out.
So I think that naming pets provides a fun opportunity to be a little bit creative. It can be as much an expression of the animal's personality as your own. I also sometimes like to write short stories and fiction and things like that. And when I do that, if I'm writing a story that features a character with an animal, with a pet, I like to expand there and come up with an interesting and clever name for even the fictional pets in my life. So yeah, that is a weird little quirk of mine. With as far as the individual names of the cats that I have had and have now, Whimsical when I adopted her, I got her from a rescue organization, and she came with the name Leia. And so I knew that wasn't going to be her name once she was home with me. And then I think it just sort of took a couple of days of trying a couple of things out and sort of seeing what felt right, what was fun and easy to say, what was something I'd want to hear myself repeatedly calling. And I think she somewhere in one of those early interactions, I don't remember specifically, but I think she did something that was just sort of funny and amusing. And I said out loud, oh, that was very whimsical. And then immediately I was like, that's who you are. And so that was her name. I called her Whimsy for short. Then with the next cat, with Percy, who I know you're all already thinking, well, wait a minute, that's a human name. Mm-hmm. Hang on. when I adopted Percy, I got him from another rescue organization. He was assigned the name Apple. And I was told he was named Apple because his head is shaped like an apple. I have no idea what that means. but again, it was like, okay, this animal's name is not Apple. Was again sort of trying a few different things with him because his coloring, he's, as I said before, he's an orange and white tabby. He's, because of his orange coloring, I was sort of playing on different types of foods that are orange. And so actually landed on persimmon. So his full name is Mr. Persimmon. Because he is very, you know, he's Mr. He's very proper. He's very dignified. But I just call him Percy for convenience sake.
So you are absolved.
Yes, exactly. I didn't break my own rule. and then with Brisket, similarly, again, got her from a rescue organization. She came with the name Odin, because first of all, the people who were fostering her at the time were mistaken about her sex. So they thought she was male. But also, as I've said, she's blind in one eye. And so that they named her Odin because I believe the Norse god Odin is also blind in one eye. I don't actually know Norse mythology well enough. Anyway, she came with the name Odin. Again, that wasn't going to stick. And I... spent about a week sort of trying on different things with her and was trying to find other variations of various mythology traditions, and it's wasn't going to stick. And so I tried out a few different names. And then one day I was just looking at her and noticed how much she resembles roast beef. And so I named her Brisket.
That is so not some great artistic mythological ending.
No. And so with Percy and Brisket, with Persimmon and Brisket, I now actually have like a little bit of a food theme going on.
Yes.
So which I like. I think that's cute.
Yes. Okay. So if you were attending a cat conference, cat conference is up to you. And if you were attending it, how would you introduce yourself?
I would say, hello, I'm Elizabeth, a lifelong cat lover, descended from a proud heritage of cat lovers and cat ladies with, I think somewhere in there, I would also acknowledge my own, what I call my genetic predisposition to becoming a cat lady. That it's, you know, as I told the story about how I ended up with two cats, for a while I had resisted. I wanted to only have one cat because I had this rule that I'd made up for myself, that the human to cat ratio needed to remain 1-to-1. Again, to like ensure good mental health, because it would be very easy just sort of like once you adopt a second cat, well, why stop at 2? Why not get 3? Why not get 4? And so it's something that I'm very aware of and very careful about.
An aristocratic descent of cat ownership. This has got real.
A proud pedigree.